Hello, everyone. I'd just like to take a quick minute before we get to the episode to let you all know that this episode is not of the highest quality. Due to some unforeseen equipment failures during the interview, I did the best with what I had to work with. But I promise you, once you sit back, relax, you'll enjoy the show. Thanks. Welcome, everyone, to the Southern Spoonful Podcast. I'm your host, Jeremy Hudson, and as always, thanks for listening. On today's episode, we'll journey yet again through the South Carolina Lowcountry in search of the perfect salty Southern oyster. But first, please find your spot at the dinner table and prepare for a heaping helping from the Southern Spoonful Podcast. Come with me today down South Carolina Highway 17 as we travel through the Lowcountry until we get to Bennett's Point Road. We'll venture down this road for the next several miles, encountering thick hardwoods and moss-draped branches, all while taking in the sights and smells the South Carolina coast has to offer. We'll pass through the Bear Island Wildlife Management Area that keeps the region looking just as pristine as it did 1,000 years ago. The ebb and flow of the tide is the beating of the Lowcountry's heart. Listen close, and you'll hear it with every heron squawk, every snap of a crab claw, and every swat of a gator's tail. Just like us, these creatures call this place home. We continue until we come across a few small buildings on our left with signs of seafood, indicating something most delicious must be afoot. It's here by the creek side where we come to Lowcountry Oysters, where Trey McMillan and his team have been doing their utmost to meet demand of oyster lovers everywhere. Also, be sure to slow down when turning into the parking lot, as there are dogs roaming about. Just FYI, any establishment with animals roaming about will probably make your top 10 favorite places to shop or eat. Lowcountry Oysters is no exception. After making my acquaintances with Trey and Seymour, we sit down for a great chat. If you're wondering, Seymour is one of the dogs who likes to roam about. Don't worry, he's a good boy. All right, welcome everyone to the Southern Spoonful Podcast. I'm your host, Jeremy Hudson, and I have here with me today Trey McMillan from Lowcountry Oysters, which is located down around Green Pond, South Carolina, down around Bennett's Point. Trey, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jeremy.
All right, so Trey, let's start with you. Can you tell us where you're from and how did you manage getting into oyster farming?
Yeah, man, so I was born and raised in Charleston. I raised in the old village, grew up on the water all the time. You know, it's been something with my family for a long time, working on waterfronts and all that. So I was a professional fisherman for about 15 years.
Wow.
Before I started the oyster farm about 5 years ago. Yeah, kind of just jumped in at feet first.
There you go.
Back.
So let me ask you, me and you were just talking a few minutes ago before we started recording, but you mentioned you have a new website out. You guys just can't seem to keep up with the demand for what you guys are producing here. Can you walk us through like the process of what it takes to, I guess, harvesting or farming oysters?
Yeah, man. So we do everything in-house. So we start with baby oyster seeds that we get that are less than 1 millimeter in size. So
wow.
You're talking about something that looks like a pepper flake, essentially. And we have our own in-house nursery. So we raise... We're shooting this year to do about 10 million oysters.
Wow.
From start to, I say finish, but you know, everything we do, we're working on a year out. So it takes a little while to grow an oyster. But there's a lot of hurdles in the way. So if you end up getting 10 million seed, out of that 10 million, if you get 70-80% yields, that'd be a great year for us. So
wow.
It's pretty labor intensive, you know, but the demand is there, and we're going to do our best to fill what we can.
You guys are the first website, oyster website, that I've ever come across where you guys actually ship within, I mean, I think it was, from what I read online, it was like 48 hours, you'll have fresh oysters right at your doorstep.
That's right. Yep. So we ship nationwide, and we ship everything FedEx priority overnight. If you go on our website, put in an order, a calendar pops up, and you pick which day you want them to show up on your door. And all that goes through this system that we have that's, you know, along with FedEx and everything else. And it's basically, it shows up on a big screen TV, tells us what we need to pull. We go out in the water, we pull it, and 24 hours later, it's at your door.
That is awesome. That's pretty amazing. You know, it's amazing the modern technology we have to kind of sync everything together anymore, you know, and something that would take, you know, I remember a time when you actually had to actually ride to the beach to be able to get any kind of oysters. And now it just seems practically overnight. With oyster farming, and correct me if I'm wrong, but with oyster farming, they're all selects instead of clusters. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Of course, here in South Carolina, we have the ever famous R rule, which is, of course, for those that are listening that don't know, the R rule refers to months that have the letter R in them. That's what we were told when we were growing up. You know, that's the only time that you can really eat or harvest oysters. I think it's more of an old wives' tale, really. But from what I've actually read is that our oysters that grow naturally are intertidal oysters. And so they're protected by the salt water. And so in the colder months, it protects them that much more. When the tide is out and the sun's hitting them, not such a good time to pick them up and eat them at that point. You know, the whole farming process, you guys actually, they're submerged at like all the time or?
All the time.
All the time. So you can just go out there at any time once you know that they're ready to mature enough to eat that you can pop them open and eat them at any time.
Go right out to them, pick one up and eat it.
That's crazy.
Yeah. That whole R month thing, it was, I'm actually really impressed. You did do your homework on that.
I did.
A lot of people don't realize that that rule was from back when there was no refrigeration. So oyster farming, the method that we do, floating cage farming, is the most highly regulated farming technique in the country. We're regulated by two state agencies and two federal agencies. So it's very, very looked after, everything, the log books that we keep and everything, I mean, it's very, very in-depth. And even down to the way we harvest, we only have a two-hour window to harvest and get the oysters down to a certain temperature.
Wow.
So not everybody can just go do it. You have to be set up. You have to have a facility set up in order to do it the right way, which is only a handful of us in the state that do it.
That's crazy. I didn't realize so much went into it.
Yeah. All these are all permits that we have to do on the wall over here.
Wow. I know y'all can't see it, but there's a ton of permits up here on his wall. That's crazy. That is... You know, but I guess that goes with everything else. Once certain associations get involved, then...
But it wants a piece of pie.
Exactly. Now, Trey, not only are you a founder and owner here at Low Country Oysters, but you also are the vice president of the South Carolina Shellfish Growers Association, as well as the South Carolina State Representative for the East Coast Growers Association. Can you tell us what the goals for those associations are? And the role you play in them.
Absolutely. So the South Carolina Growers Association was founded a pretty good while ago. And it was founded by, you know, working watermen. And it was basically an association to kind of help regulate the industry while also protecting the working man. Mm-hmm. It kind of died out for a little while. And about 5 years ago, 4 years ago, it really started to come back. So it's still kind of in the rebuild stage now, but it's getting some traction. We're getting back on track with it and doing some great things. We've got a lot of really amazing partners with it as far as restaurant groups, Surge Group down in Hilton Head. They're amazing. A lot of the restaurants in Charleston, there's so many. It'd go on for days for me to list them all, right. But, you know, the CVB and Restaurant Association, they're all major role players in helping us revitalize.
So back to the oyster farm in just a moment. Why did you guys choose Bennett's Point? I mean, I guess my question is it the location, or is it just that you guys were already around this way, or?
So really, it's a little bit of both. We obviously, you don't want to be in an area where there's a lot of boat traffic. Each cage is about 6 foot long, about 4 foot wide. And when you're talking about doing something on commercial level, it takes a lot of space.
Right.
You know, I say that, but I mean, in all actuality, it's only a couple of acres. You don't want to, I don't want to be around an area where there's a lot of boat traffic and I'm putting my product and my inventory and my gear at risk as long as somebody else's boat or, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
So really it's an unbelievable, watershed here, just the cleanliness of the water.
Right.
You know, there's no development. It's a 350,000 acre estuary. There never been any development. There's no power plants. There's no sewage factories. You know, none of that stuff. So really it's the purest, cleanest water that you can grow an oyster in, really.
So it produces a better product. It's a cleaner, more self-sustained oyster almost.
Absolutely. Okay. It's not only self-sustaining, it's actually rejuvenating.
So wow.
It's, you know, we take the pressure off the wild oyster beds by doing it this way and allow those wild oyster beds to regrow because they've been hit so hard by, you know, commercial harvesting,
right,
and stuff. That really, if it weren't for farming in this practice, you're talking about total oyster depletion in maybe 5-6 years.
Wow. I had no idea.
Yeah, man.
So basically what you're telling me is that I know I've seen them in the past, the whole oyster shell recycling centers. You can actually, once you're done shucking all your oysters, you can actually take the shells from those oysters and have them, they'll kind of clean them up and send them back out into the wild, so to speak, and drop them off on the oyster beds, the naturally occurring oyster beds. And those oysters over time will reattach themselves, correct?
Correct. That is right. Handful of oyster farms that farm oysters the way I am in the state, we're probably 75% of the oyster shell that goes back out with the animal.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, every oyster roast that we you know, supply oysters for, all the restaurants that shuck our oysters, you know, they come from so many different places. And there's probably a pretty high percentage that those oysters are coming from one of the farmers.
That is wild. I love it, though. So just curious, I know we're jumping around here a bit, but with your involvement in the South Carolina East Coast Growers Association, has that changed the way you do things here at Low Country Oysters? Has it changed any sort of business model or the way business is conducted?
I wouldn't say it changes anything. It definitely helps. It's really just I don't mean to say this by leaving any women out, because there's actually some phenomenal women oyster farmers in the state of South Carolina, as well as the East Coast. But,
right,
you know, it's kind of a brotherhood or brother womanhood, I guess, for all the growers to kind of collaborate,
right,
feel protected. You know, you feel safer in numbers from, you know, certain legislation. And just it's such a big thing,
yeah,
that the person, the actual farmer, a lot of things can go past without even realizing it, to hurt you, essentially.
Wow.
So having that protection and just the chance to have to bounce an idea off of somebody that knows what you're talking about.
You Absolutely.
Know, anything like that. So it's a very good resource.
I got you. Okay. So basically everybody's got each other's backs.
100%.
Absolutely. That's cool. I like that. So speaking of the way you guys have possibly changed business, but has the pandemic, if at all, has it changed the way you do business? Has it, what kind of impact has it has on the oyster business overall?
It did. You know, it was, like for many other people, very scary and kind of learning how to navigate new waters.
Yeah.
You don't really want to.
I understand.
It definitely taught us not to solely rely on one revenue stream. Really, you know, we were pretty much not, and we still are, most of our business is wholesale business,
right,
but as soon as the restaurants closed down, we have all these oysters and, you know, all these employees that were just kind of standing around looking at each other. So, you know, after the first 6 weeks of that, I was sitting here staring at them, staring back at me, wondering what to do.
Yeah.
So we had to make some adjustments. And we were fortunate to where we had done some shipping in the past, so we were kind of set up for it. But we had never really pushed it, never really thrown any marketing towards it or anything like that, because we were so busy with our restaurants taking care of them that why would we need to? You know, nobody ever saw us coming.
Right.
So once the pandemic hit, we kind of revitalized it, the shipping aspect of things, reworked our website, and did some marketing with it, and it did very well. It actually did so well, we were having to do another website now just to keep up. So.
Well, that's a good thing. I actually had an interview here a while back with another gentleman, and he made a good point. During the pandemic, it's not so much as trying to make a profit. It's trying to make it through it. It's just being able to survive it at some point,
I can agree with that more.
Yeah.
Making a profit's one thing, but the biggest thing that I took away from it is we didn't have to let anybody go. These guys, they feed their families this way. It's being able to keep everybody, our entire staff, one was, to me, that's a success.
Right.
It's never easy to do anything like that, and just the feel, the gratitude of not having to do it is I feel like we did pretty good. So.
Yeah. With Low Country Oysters, I think I've already mentioned this before, so you can have fresh oysters delivered straight to your doorsteps in a matter of days. Can you walk us through the packing process? Is there a certain, like you said, once you harvest the oysters, you actually have to have them down to a certain temperature by, within 2 hours' time. So with the packing process, is there a certain way that you guys have to do that before they ship out? Or do you just pack them on dry ice or gel packs?
So everything that we do shipping-wise is done to FedEx and FDA standards. So we have a cardboard box with a liner inside of that with gel packs.
Mm-hmm.
Oysters, it's all bundled up, and then we use a tape that it's like a tape that you can only open by cutting it. Like
right.
Once you put it on there, it's there.
Yeah.
So if that tape is in any way damaged or open or anything like that, when you get the box, it's discarded oysters completely.
Wow.
Either something opened them and they could have gotten contaminated, or somebody opened it, something.
Very true.
So everything we do is to their standards. They do a lot to cover themselves as long as all the consumers. So it's about as safe as you can get it, where it's coming from.
I'm still kind of shell-shocked by that, the fact that you can, for me, somebody who lives as close as I do to the coast, it's not a problem, just to ride down if I really want some oysters and go get a bushel of oysters. And you guys are sitting up here, you're sending them out by mail, and that just blows my mind.
Yeah, man. FedEx will be here about 2 o'clock today.
There you go. Around here, I'm not sure if everybody listening has ever experienced one, but a good old-fashioned oyster roast. Can you recall your first oyster roast?
Oh, man. I wish I could. I wish I could have that feeling again. I knew I enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was such a normal thing growing up with my family and, just my family friends and my parents' friends. It was just, I don't think you really realize it's such a ordeal when you grow up around it,
Absolutely.
So, it was...
It's crazy.
It's been forever.
I remember, of course, you can't have an oyster roast without a cold beer. And
absolutely.
I'm sure, it's flowing like water. And then, of course, you got to get your burlap sacks and you got to get your fire hot enough and, a good piece of a tin to throw those oysters on,
That's
wash them down. I'm telling you.
That's what I'm talking about.
It's been maybe 3 years ago. Me and my wife actually did our first and our last one since. But we went and got, I think it was 2 or 3 bushels of oysters. And, man, they were gone in no time. We had none left over. It was a great time. Everybody come out and we just enjoyed it. We made that. We made some shrimp and grits and stuff to go along with it, and man, by the time I cooked the shrimp and grits and put them out and come back inside, kind of washed up, went back out to join the party, no more shrimp and grits.
That's a good thing.
Absolutely. So if you can't recall your first one, how about your last one?
Oh man, our last big one was seaweed last year.
Right.
So we do all the seaweed, Southeast Wildlife Expo.
Right.
That's held in Charleston, I believe. It's February area.
Mm-hmm. Sounds about right.
It's actually Valentine's weekend. So it's
yep.
a 3-day event, and it's incredible. So we supply a lot of oysters for that. That was our last big one before the big shutdown.
Right.
We've done some here recently where, again, couldn't do it without the amazing partner we have to do this, something
right.
like that. But we did one, a couple at Firefly Distillery.
Okay,
they're
cool.
A new spot there in North Charleston.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a fantastic job. Just the amount of space they have, the way everything runs, it's just so flawless. They put so much thought and effort into it. It's fantastic. So that was probably our last oyster roast, I guess, really, which was about 3 weeks ago now, maybe more.
Okay, cool. And you personally, how do you prepare your oysters other than roasting or steaming or raw? How do you prefer it?
So my wife makes this basil, garlic, parmesan mixture that goes on top. I'm saying it completely wrong. I don't know what it is, but it's amazing.
That sounds good.
Yeah, man. We'll take some and take some oysters and chuck them.
Yeah.
So they'll be raw. They'll still be in the shell, and we'll put them on the grill.
Yeah.
And take about a little dob of that stuff and throw them on top.
Oh man.
Parmesan cheese on top.
Okay.
It's almost like an oyster rockefeller.
Yeah.
Her take on it.
Man. That sounds good. So just curious. I know you guys have some. I'm not going to say it because if I say it, I'm going to say it wrong. But actually, it's a topping. What do you
mignonette.
Have? Mignonette.
Mignonette.
Okay, I got it right. Mignonette. Okay, so they actually sell, and you can actually go to their website. But Low Country Oyster sells some mignonette. And exactly what is that?
So a mignonette is a vinegar-based sauce that comes in like a eyedropper bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And this company called Driftwood Pantry.
Driftwood Pantry.
Driftwood Pantry. Okay. He's a Charleston native as well.
Okay.
Chef Will Lacey.
Okay.
And he came up with all these.
Really?
I mean, to be honest with you, not a mignonette, but the flavors that we
right.
carry. And they are phenomenal. So
and what flavors do you have?
So we have the Charleston, the pot liquor, and watermelon.
Ooh.
Watermelon is... good. They're all good.
Really?
But
watermelon.
On a hot summer day, man, that watermelon one.
You wouldn't think that watermelon and oysters would go together.
It's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
I like grilling a watermelon.
Really?
Oh, it's awesome.
That's not anything I would,
Me neither. I don't know where they come up with this stuff, but it's good.
I'm telling you. All right, so the Charleston, what is that one flavor-wise?
The Charleston one is kind of like a savory, spicy flavor.
Okay.
The pot liquor is... when you cook Collins?
Yeah.
The juice that's in there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's it tastes like that.
Really?
It's unbelievable, yeah.
I mean, you're talking about like ham bone and...
the whole shebang. Not at all.
That is crazy.
It's wild, man. The stuff that he's made it blows my mind. First of all, I don't even know how you put spices and stuff together to come up with stuff.
No idea.
He's got it figured out, so
that's crazy.
All to him for it.
Absolutely.
And then our house flavor is barbecue.
Barbecue.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's the best one. And what goes better than the old Southern tradition of barbecue and oysters?
Absolutely. Not to mention that, you guys sell a plethora of T-shirts and hoodies and hats, and now you guys got a face mask. So you guys just sell a whole bunch of stuff, and it's got this mascot on it. Do you have a name for the mascot? The logo, I'm sorry?
We called him Bill Shucker.
Bill Shucker.
Yeah.
That's a heck of a name.
Yeah, it's just kind of... those things
just
kind of came about.
That's cool. And I immediately when I saw it, that's one of the things that kind of drew my eye to not only your website but as well your Instagram as well. And I said, wait a minute, I'm a beard lover, and you don one as well.
Absolutely.
And it just I was like, wow, that is cool. And then of course you got the almost like the Poseidon trident behind it, and it's a really cool, he's wearing a hat and everything. It's you can't get any more Low Country than that.
That's right, man.
Well, Trey, I appreciate you being here today. Just real quick, is there a website, matter of fact, your website, if you want to give a plug for that, and maybe your Instagram if you guys have Facebook?
Our Instagram is at Loco Oysters, LOWCOOYSTERS. And then our website is also locooysters.com.
Loco Oysters. All right, guys, head on over to locooysters.com and order your oysters from Bennett's Point right now. Once again, Trey, thank you for being here today.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Trey, I'd like to thank you for allowing me to come down and conduct the interview there at your establishment in Bennett's Point. I'd also like to remind each and every one of you to head over to locooysters.com to order your Low Country oysters directly from Bennett's Point, directly from the South Carolina coast. They will ship nationwide within 24 hours. That's right, folks. You could have fresh, straight out the creek, Low Country oysters waiting on your doorstep within a matter of days. They ship everything fresh, and I promise you, when it gets delivered, it will be of the utmost quality. Trey actually was nice enough to send me with about a dozen oysters of my own home, and let me tell you, folks, these oysters were jam up. They are that perfect saltiness, brininess that you're looking for, and they did not disappoint. I'd also like to suggest that if you head over once again to their website, locooysters.com, L-O-W-C-O, oysters.com, you can also pick up a 3-pack of their Driftwood mignonettes. They have 3 flavors. Now, if you don't know what a mignonette is, it's kind of like a little sauce, a little vinegary sauce that you can dip the oyster in, or you can apply right on top of the oyster before consumption. And let me tell you, these mignonettes actually enhance the flavor of the oysters themselves. So you have 3 different flavors. You have Charleston. Next, we have watermelon. And finally, we have pot liquor. And those were all handcrafted for Low Country oysters by Driftwood Pantry. So please go do yourself a favor. Once again, head to locooysters.com, order some mignonette, order your oysters, and I promise you, you'll be sitting and smiling in no time. That's going to do it for today's episode. Thank you all for listening, and until next time, y'all take care.